I'm glad you're all here for this end-of-the-week edition of Political Rewind. We've got a full house ready to talk about some stories, big stories, and some of which really affect the state of Georgia in a significant way. Jim Galloway, the lead political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, is with us. He's now in the Wednesday and Sunday papers. Big change. How did that feel this first week to be in a Wednesday
paper? Well, you got to do your planning on Friday for the next week.
And you're working on a column for Sunday. What's the preview?
We've got another NFL Sunday, and we've got another afternoon of looking at who's kneeling and who's standing. Right. And I think the locker room is winning out on this one.
All right, good. Well, we'll see that on Sunday in Jim Galloway's column. Of course, he also oversees the Political Insider blog at Politically Georgia, the new political feature.
$3.99 a month. <All right>. I'm worth a dime a day.
Yeah, you're going to have to be an underwriter if you want to keep up that kind of talk. Dr. Andre Gillespie, a political science professor from Emory University, is back with us. It's really good to have you here. It's been a couple weeks since we've seen you.
Yeah, but it's always great to be back, so
yeah,
thanks.
Thank you for being here. We also have Chip Lake with us. He's a Republican strategist, consultant. He's worked with the likes of congressional leaders like Lynn Westmoreland, worked on his campaign. Chip, you're in a good place to talk with us today because you told us you worked on Tom Price's first congressional campaign.
I did. It doesn't seem like all that long ago, but it was.
When
I sure
was
did.
I don't even, he's
that would have been 2004.
Four.
2004 okay. Cycle. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to talk a lot about Tom Price. And Michael Owens, chairman of the Cobb County Democratic Party, is back with us. Hey, Michael, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. Always great to be on the show.
You know, Michael, we know you're our IT expert. You work in internet security. What do you think about the developments at Equifax, their CEO, out?
Yeah, I think the last time I was on, we were talking about it kind of right after it happened, and we kind of knew then there was a lot of activity that was going to happen, and ultimately someone has to be held accountable for it. So there's some people out. There's some new job opportunities available. I saw some job postings for Equifax.
What, does that mean you're applying for the job?
That does not mean I'm applying for any of those jobs. You talk about a hot seat to be in, right? I'll take a pass on that one.
I guess. Let's do a quick look at a breaking news story this afternoon. Jim, we've been paying close attention over the past couple of months to whether Plant Vogtle is going to be completed at a really extravagant price tag. Georgia Power wants to go ahead. The PSC still has some final votes to...
A final vote in February.
But in the meantime, news broke late this morning. The Department of Energy has committed conditionally to give Plant Vogtle a $3.7 billion loan guarantee. That will take them closer to being able to do this.
That's all part of the financial package. I think there's $1.6 billion for Georgia Power, $1.6 for Oglethorpe, and then the change goes to the EMCs.
Okay. So we're going to follow that story. And one of the reasons we follow it, this isn't just some distant issue about an energy company wanting to build. In the long run, we're all paying for this.
Oh, no, we are already paying for it.
Yeah,
if you're a Georgia Power customer, you've been paying for it since, I think, 2011.
Yeah, so we'll watch that story as it develops. Okay, everybody, about a week and a half ago, Politico first broke the story that Tom Price had been using charter flights to get to a number of destinations that he probably could have just as easily gotten on a commercial flight to get to. The first Politico story had him half a dozen flights that their reporters were able to uncover. That story has grown and grown to the point where just this past week, we learned earlier this week, it's 26 flights, and the development last night, Andre Gillespie, is that in addition to the $400,000+ in charter flights, it turns out that Price, with his wife accompanying him, was using military aircraft to go to Europe, to Africa, to the Far East, to China, at a cost of more than $500,000. We're now talking about $1 million in flights off commercial. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the issue, one, is optics. And so, one, you know, if Donald Trump is coming in to drain the swamp, as many people have pointed out, then this looks hypocritical for his cabinet secretaries to be going on junkets at taxpayer expense. It's hypocritical given the extent to which Republicans criticized, you know, Michelle Obama for going on vacation and using Air Force One when she does not have the option or didn't as First Lady to fly commercial. And then I think it also raises this question of, I mean, there's the, do you really need to take a plane from D.C. to Philadelphia? It's something I've done in the past. I've lived in D.C. My dad lives in Philly.
A $72 ticket, and if you do it by private jet, it's $25,000.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's also Amtrak.
Or do Amtrak.
I've done it plenty of times. So it's that. But it's also, okay, so what does the Secretary of Health and Human Services need to go to Europe and Africa and China for? And so I think people are thinking of, you know, we can understand that there are some, you know, extenuating circumstances that might require private jet travel, but is this really advancing his particular mission? He's not Rex Tillerson. Yeah. He's not Jim Mattis.
Yeah, all of these trips have been really spotlighted, and they've put a price on the hot seat. I do think the Washington to Philadelphia trip, because of the notion of how he could have done it, has gotten particular attention. I don't know if we're going to in a minute listen to Tom Price because he was on Fox News last night trying to explain all this. But Jim, one of the things that was interesting, someone pointed out, it may have been Brett Baer last night, I just don't remember, that his charter flight left from Dulles Airport, 45-minute drive from Washington to get on the airplane to go to Philadelphia. He could have gone to Union Station and gotten on an Amtrak.
Nobody,
and been there
nobody
in less time.
Drives to Dulles.
Right.
And it's just more of there's a train leaving probably about every hour headed north. Like, there's no reason. Like, you could even splurge and take the Acela, and I think as a taxpayer, I'm cool with that.
I think what's interesting is that we've had, in the week and a half that this has bubbled through, is you've had some people raise the notion that this is a security issue. I think we had somebody do that, but clearly that's not working.
Price people initially said it was a matter of security, as well as being something that he needed to get to these things as quickly as possible. Chip, some time ago, it's been a while, but you did at one point work for him. How much trouble? And of course, we know this week, and we've reported on it, Trump has not stood up for him. He's basically, even as recently as yesterday, he was asked Price's fate was going to be. Are you going to fire him? And he didn't say a word to the reporter who asked him the question.
Yeah, I was a little surprised at that. That's the one thing that kind of stood out to me this week when watching this story develop. I don't think the president's been on a commercial airliner in probably 50 years. It's hard to believe that he would have this much problem with one of his cabinet secretaries getting on private planes. And so when I saw that, I said, you know, there must be there's something has to be going on separate of this between the relationship that the president has with his HHS secretary. The only other thing I would say, too, is he's taken a unique path into the position to be the HHS secretary. He was a very partisan member of Congress, and he was very good at it. Usually partisan members of Congress don't get to be cabinet secretaries for presidents. And when they do, he's not just any cabinet secretary. He was brought in to be the internal face of the administration to repeal Obamacare. He is not going to get the benefit of the doubt in that sort of situation.
All right, let's Michael, I want to get you in, but let's get some sound going here. First of all, let's listen. As recently as the White House press briefing yesterday afternoon, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was asked about Tom Price's fate. Let's listen to the exchange.
Does Secretary Price expect to keep his job in this administration?
I think the president's addressed this yesterday. We're going through this process. We're going to conduct a full review, and we'll see what happens.
Michael, we'll see what happens is not the sort of ringing endorsement you would want if you were Tom Price.
When you hear, let's see what's going to happen, you might as well start floating your resume out there because it's a pretty good idea what's going to happen, right? And I think as Chip said, right, I mean, the thing about it was he was brought in for one explicit reason, really, right, to be that Republican voice that could push and whip those votes, you know, to repeal Obamacare and bring in a new health care bill. That did not happen. That's been one of the most stunning defeats that the Trump administration has had thus far. So
But yeah. you haven't seen in all of Trump's recriminations, he hasn't singled out Tom Price. I mean there was that challenge that he gave to him at the Boy Scout Jamboree in West Virginia earlier this summer. But that was before all the dominoes,
which made him a prime target.
But you haven't seen Donald Trump take after him on Twitter. He hasn't become that personal punching bag.
Right,
that's true. One thing that was kind of surprising me though was that none of his former colleagues, right, former House representatives from Georgia, has had anything to do with this as far as stepping up for him at all. I mean, you've probably seen the reports. You know, Barry Loudermilk was very clear about, you know, hey, I don't have any judgment. I don't really want anything to say. And, you know, Congressman Collins was just as far off, right, basically saying, I don't have any comment at all. So, you know, from a former colleagues of his not being willing to step up and say anything in his defense, the fellow conservatives, I thought was quite ringing.
Well, it's because it looks bad.
What I wonder. Is it that it's toxic and that he is toxic? I think it's fair to say, and you know, we can not have to go into this in great detail. Price was kind of he was his own person when he was a member of the Georgia congressional delegation. I think that's a safe, fair way to say it, isn't it, Chip? There's some questions as to how he integrated himself with the rest of that delegation.
I mean, he alienated himself from the Nathan Deal camp for quite a long time because of his support for Karen Handel during the gubernatorial race.
And to Bill's point about him being his own person, and I share this story not as a criticism of Tom Price, but to show that there was some conventional wisdom up there. You know, early on in the time after Lynn became a member of Congress and sworn in, I think it was 2000 and. Might have been 2008. You know, there was a lot of internal fighting between John Boehner and Eric Cantor. And, you know, they were very different type personalities and they were different people. And as one person was describing to me, I remember at a dinner, and they didn't know that I'd worked for Tom Price. They said, you know, in the Republican conference, you've got five types of members in the Republican conference. You got those that are loyal to John Boehner. You got those that are loyal to Eric Cantor. You got those that have a good relationship with both of them. And you have those that clearly don't like both of them. And then in the fifth category, you have Tom Price.
Okay. I think that tells us a lot.
You know, kind of does. And it's not a criticism of Tom. It's just he has always been his own man.
He's forged his own path. So let's presumably, when he first heard President Trump on Wednesday not defend him with reporters, essentially saying we're looking into it, and when asked if Price was out again, the president said, we'll see, which was also not much of an affirmation, apparently he decided it was time to do damage control. And so last night, Price went on Fox News, Brett Baer's show. Let's listen to some of the conversation, starting with Price's, the closest he came essentially to an apology.
All of these trips were official business. All of them were within budget. All of them were approved by the normal processes that every other administration has gone through. But we've heard the concerns. I've heard the criticisms. And in order to make certain that people appreciate that my respect for the taxpayer is as strong as it can be and always has been in my 40-year career, we think it's important to do a number of things. One is to say there will be no private air charters at HHS going forward. A second is to cooperate fully, obviously, with the Inspector General. There's a review going on, and then I called for an internal review within the department itself. And then finally, to pay for my portion of those trips.
But you're writing a check for, we understand from your officials, $51,887. The total cost is estimated at more than $400,000 for the 26 flights since May. Is that okay?
Well, as I said, there's an ongoing review being done by the Inspector General, and I think it's important that we wait for that review.
Jim, we should point out that Brett Baer is referring to the 26 flights. It was only after that interview that we got the news from Politico that there were all those military flights
as well. And we should note that the White House has confirmed that they approved each and every one of those military flights.
Yes, they did. And Price has said his wife accompanied him on the military flights, and Price has said he has reimbursed for his wife's travel. But what do we make of this? Not quite an apology.
Well, you know, on the one hand, in terms of reimbursing for your own seats, it's my understanding, and somebody correct me if I'm wrong, that that's actually standard operating procedure. So you know it costs a lot more than a first-class plane ticket to, you know, put up, you know, one of these planes. But I think it's standard operating procedure that you only pay for the seats that you occupy. So I understand that, you know, taxpayers might not like that, but that's kind of how it always is.
And so, I'm a little – okay, so we're all, I think – and, Michael, I'll get you to the best of our knowledge, these planes were put in the air for Tom Price. It isn't as if he hitched a ride with three or four other people on a charter flight that was already headed to a destination. So I think we're going to need to hear more of an explanation of why he would, you know, what Andre says is interesting, but the question is, why isn't he just paying for the whole use of the aircraft?
Yeah, that's exactly the comment I was going to make. It's not like this was an Uber airline, right? Like it's a ride share you pick up on. You know, the bottom line is that flight does not go wheels up unless the secretary is on that plane. Right. So, you know, him understanding that he has to take fiscal responsibility for every single dime that was incurred for that flight being taken off. Right. Whether he pays for his seat or his wife's seats or his son's seats or whoever. Right. That doesn't pay for all the maintenance, the pilot's time, all that time he has to account for.
And the point that you all just made is exactly why he's in a really tough spot right now, because writing a $52,000 check hurts. Writing a $400,000 check hurts eight times more than that.
Well,
and by the way, if you do that, you might still not save your job.
Well, and that's it. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, this is a question for Chip. Could he use? Number one, he is a wealthy man. Price was the wealthiest man in the Georgia delegation, the congressional delegation. But could he use campaign funds for that?
Does he still have those campaign funds?
I would imagine so.
I don't know that he can. That's a good question. It would be a good question for a campaign finance attorney. I don't know that it would qualify for that, but that's a good question to look into, because I know that when he got the appointment, he had, I believe, well over $1 to $1.5 million in his campaign account. That would certainly be something worth exploring.
Hey, we've got to get a break in a second, but Andre, I want to come back to you because Robert Jimison, who listens to our show, and you may recall, if you're a longtime listener, was an outstanding intern on this program, now at CNN. He says, Dr. G is correct. POTUS has to do the same when using Air Force One for campaign trips, just pays for the seat.
So, you know, my issue with that is if those are the rules, I think everybody just has to be aware of that before they complain. But the bigger issue is, was this really necessary and essential? Well, and especially when you're conveniently going to places where you live or conveniently going to places where your kid lives, it looks like you're, you know, taking family trips on the government dime. Right. And that looks bad.
Olivia is telling us, Olivia Rangel is saying, you better get a break in. We're going to do that, but we can set up the next segment because we'll keep talking about this for a few more minutes. This may be the legal and legally correct way to pay these back, but the next question is, if you've got $1 million worth of travel that you haven't paid for, that you've or that's been chartered or military flights, and you're willing to write a check for $52,000, is this enough to help save your job? We'll talk about that after we come back from a break.
GPB News was with you throughout Hurricane Irma.
This is a rapidly moving hurricane, and the consequences of that hurricane can change dramatically.
Macon has 5,000 hotel rooms, and they're all full. I mean, there's even people who have opened their homes to people they don't know.
The entire state of Georgia has been affected, and as a result of that, recovery is going to be a little more slow.
Listen to GPB News. We stand with the facts. You're listening to Georgia Public Broadcasting. We're an 18-station radio network of GPB. Good afternoon. I'm Ellen Reinhart. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, a major contributor to the economic and cultural vitality of downtown Atlanta and the metro Atlanta area.
So this is one of those days on Political Rewind when I remember that I run into people out there who say, hey, we love listening, but we sometimes aren't sure whose voice is whose. So because we have a full house, this is my chance on this show to say, tell everybody who you are, and that way they'll hear your voice.
I'm Andre Gillespie from Emory University.
Michael Owens, the chairman of the Cobb County Democratic Committee.
My name is Chip Lake, and I'm a Republican strategist here in Georgia.
And I'm Jim Galloway with the AJC.
You are the Jim Galloway, political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jim has, where do we think this stands. Is he going to be able to keep his job?
You know, I think one of the answers to that is number one, is how useful is he going to be to Trump in the next few months? I mean, does Trump need someone who's willing to pull the plug on Obamacare in every aspect that he can? And if that's Tom Price, then if that's what Trump wants, then maybe he does stay on.
That's an interesting point. When the story first broke in Politico, the reporters talked to White House officials, who, of course, remained anonymous, who raised the question about why Tom Price was flying around the country when they were trying to pass the repeal and replace bill, and suggested that he had not been as deeply involved in the legislative process as possible. But Jim makes a good point. As an administrator at HHS, Tom Price has an enormous amount of power to scale back Obamacare in a way that President Trump may want.
There's no question about it. And, there's no question about it. I don't know that the president when he was asked a question about it on Wednesday, I believe it was Wednesday this week when he was asked a question about it, I don't know that he had formulated exactly what he was going to do, how he was going to handle this situation. Obviously, he made it very clear to Tom Price, and in the Brett Baer interview, Price said that he did speak to the president individually about this, and he expressed his concerns. It's going to be interesting to see where it goes from here. I told somebody yesterday, if he can make it to 5 o'clock today, he's got a chance at making through next week, and we're an hour and a half away.
Let's listen quickly to the exchange in which Brett Baer asked Price last night if he thinks his job is safe.
I work at the pleasure of the president. The president is a remarkable leader. I'm incredibly privileged to serve in his cabinet and work on behalf of the American people. And I look forward to regaining the trust that the American people, some of the American people, may have lost in the activities that I took, and to not only regain the trust of the American people, but gain the trust of the administration and the president.
Andra, Michael, Friday late afternoons, early evenings are when President Trump and early Saturday morning pulled some of his biggest and most dramatic moves. What do we think about Price's future in the next 12 hours?
Well, you know, I am less worried about the next 12 hours, even though I can see Chip's point. President Trump earlier said that he was going to take executive action on Obamacare, and so it may be useful to keep him around for that. And so then I might be looking for the Friday night at 5 o'clock, sort of like right after that happens.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm more concerned about the overall hypocrisy of it, as Dr. Gillespie mentioned earlier. I mean, you know, Tom Price was one of those members of Congress that was screaming, you know, back, 5-10 years ago about, you know, how the Democrats were spending all this money, and Nancy Pelosi specifically was flying in luxury jets all around the country.
And there's plenty of video, you know? Video to show that.
Yeah, well, so, she was. It's not as if he was making it up.
Not as he's making it up, but not as he's there, you know, now. It's proven and showing that he's doing the exact same thing.
As we wrap this up, Jim, this is an issue that resonates with people because it conjures up the image of the fat cat smoking a big cigar and jumping out of a limousine onto his private jet. It really resonates. And if Price stays on, is this going to be an issue in the 2018? Is this the swamp and it's going to hurt him?
Well, I will tell you what it could see it play into the kind of the Roy Moore situation that we've got now on the Republican side. I mean, what Price did was a bipartisan. It's a bipartisan scandal.
Right.
Everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Michael over here, a Democrat, he objects to it. But you've got plenty of Republicans with Tea Party legacies and conservative Christian legacies that are just as upset about it.
All right. Well, we're going to watch that unfold, and of course, we'll keep talking about it as the situation warrants. But I agree with Chip. I think in the hours ahead, we'll have a better sense of whether President Trump is going to let this thing slide or actually take some strong action. We'll see. Jim, let's talk very briefly about a Georgia story that we're going to be following a lot more as we move toward the legislature. State Representative Alan Peek from Macon made it known. I read this on Politically Georgia, actually, that he's already paving the way for bringing back a bill to allow for limited production of marijuana cannabinoid. I can never say that word. Cannabis oil is what I say.
Medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana in Georgia is saying again that it's just too difficult, and federal laws make it almost impossible for people to import
right.
it.
Right. Yeah.
The state.
What he's done is he's gotten himself a mailing list of all the people who have applied and received special licenses to possess this stuff in Georgia, and says, please contact your lawmaker, because we need to get to be able to legalize the growing of this medicinal marijuana in Georgia, which is now forbidden right now. You have to break the law by bringing it across mm-hmm. state lines.
Governor Deal has always chipped he was standing strong against this, but he's moving into his last year in office.
Yeah.
And the question is whether that may, in fact, have an impact on how he deals with an issue like this.
I think it could. And you know, this law's been around now for about a year and a half. And what we do know is it is difficult to get your hands on some of this oil, importing it, if you say, from other states. And so I don't know if Alan Peake will have success at actually getting a bill passed through the legislature that allows for the growing and the cultivation here. It might be a compromise type situation where he might get a consolation prize that limits the restrictions on how it can come.
Or expands the list of diseases that it can be applied
okay.
to.
Good point.
Okay,
sure.
So no matter what he does, Andre, he runs right up against Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who is adamantly opposed to any legalization of marijuana, medical, recreational, or in any form whatsoever. And we still don't know where that's all going to settle down in terms of states that have already legalized marijuana.
Well, I mean, I think probably what Georgia is banking on here is that other states are more egregiously in violation of federal law than Georgia is going to be. So us having, you know, the type of oil that you can't get high off of is not the same thing as being in Colorado or Oregon or Nevada or Washington, where you can grow it and smoke it anywhere you want.
And remember that Congress has slapped some restrictions on the U.S. Justice Department's budget that prevents them from prosecuting these kinds of cases.
And what are the odds that Jeff Sessions will be Attorney General 6 months from now? I mean, I think that's probably a 50-50 proposition.
Oh, man. Oh, Chip Lake. Let's put that up on the board.
Nobody's job security is safe in the administration, and that's a long time to serve in that position. With Russia going on, if there are indictments that come out with the Mueller investigation, it's just a long time for me to see him to be in that position.
I think one slightly different take on this is he's taking a more progressive stance, is looking at the federal classification of marijuana as a class one or schedule one drug, right? And I think that obviously has a lot to do with not just in Georgia, but nationwide, right? How marijuana as a recreation drug and as a municipal medicine is viewed upon.
Actually, that's a really good point, especially when we've got two Democratic candidates for governor who are trying to find a new path
yes.
to victory. I mean, it has either Stacey Evans or Stacey Abrams stepped out on that
Jim,
issue?
Jim, I'm not putting anything out there.
All right. I'm
giving my own personal opinion here.
I think the gentleman from Cobb County should be forced to answer the question.
Meanwhile, I just got I didn't mention this to any of you in advance, but I just got an email newsletter from Kwanzaa Hall, one of the candidates for mayor around noon today, encouraging city council to take action on an ordinance that would dramatically reduce fines for marijuana possession in the city of Atlanta. That's an interesting story to watch unfold.
Yeah. Vincent Ford was actually, I think, the first one to introduce that.
Yes.
And the question is going to be whether that produces any kickback when the General Assembly reconvenes in January.
Wait a minute. Before we go any further on this, Chip Lake just showed me an important message. Chip, why don't you're breaking this story, Chip.
Well, I was just, Jennifer Jacobs, who's the White House reporter for Bloomberg News, just tweeted out, Trump tells press asking if he'll fire Tom Price, quote, he's a fine man, we're going to make a decision tonight.
Well, that's a really double-edged sword.
So instead of 5 p.m., it's 8 p.m.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think he's bought a few more hours.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. I mean, he's a fine man. We're going to make a decision. That's an ominous sign.
That's I think that's what Trump said about Luther Strange.
But I mean, I'm just also remembering when the Sebastian Gorka announcement kind of came out. It was late. It was actually after sort of the normal workday was over. So,
all right. Well, we'll watch this unfold. I think it is worth pointing out that there were Republican officials in this state who did hope that Tom Price's HHS secretary might be able to make some decisions on health care that would be a positive, have a positive impact in the state of Georgia. They were sort of looking to him to make decisions that could help the state. So if he is out, first of all, the question is, did he in fact do that? Has he done it so far? And if he's out, certainly they're not going to get any advantages out of it. So we'll watch that unfold. Let's talk briefly, Andra, let me turn to you on this first. Without much fanfare, to my knowledge at all, the city of Savannah yesterday decided to rename. I know they talked about it, but it didn't blow up into the kind of issue that you know things like Confederate memorials have in other places. They renamed the Eugene Talmadge. They have not.
No. They have formally asked the legislature to rename it.
Well, that's right. But I mean, they have all approved a decision to change it to the Savannah Bridge, that iconic bridge.
Right. But the legislature still has to it gets the final word on this.
But it didn't cause a stir, much of a stir in Savannah at all.
Well, I mean, you know, part of that may have to do with the demographics of the city. And so, you know, this is nice. I don't think we should look at this as a harbinger of things to come. I still think there are going to be some really hotly contested debates about how we remember the Civil War and about what we do with these monuments that exist. Changing names of things like bridges and streets and sometimes even schools, because I think it was Dallas today that has decided they're going to scrub the names of Confederate generals from their schools in their school district. That might be slightly easier to do than figuring out how to get rid of monuments that are, you know, very explicitly in many states protected by state law.
Okay.
Well, I would just add that when you're the Talmadges, Herman and Jean, they've got a lot of a long legacy in the Capitol. And as we saw, Tommy Irvin, who just died, he was an old Eugene Talmadge guy.
Yeah.
And there are still people around there. I think this changing the name is going to be a lot harder than you might think.
But it may not be an issue as much. So it may be based on the fact that the Talmadge name does still mean something to people down there. It's not quite the same as the Confederate memorial sort of issue, although goodness knows Eugene Talmadge had a history as a race baiter and as a segregationist, an arch segregationist. So one other really quick item, Jim, and then we're going to talk about Roy Moore in Alabama. Help us understand, you now have Richard Woods, the superintendent of schools, and Nathan Deal at odds over the new education plan that the superintendent submitted to the Federal Department of Education, the new version of the old George Bush No Child Left Behind Act calls for a new plan to be put into place. Richard Wood's plan de-emphasizes to some extent testing as the measurement of whether a school is succeeding. And among other things, it was like, has attendance improved? Other softer measurements. And he submits that directly to the feds, but the governor of each state is supposed to sign off. And Nathan Deal's refused to do that.
And officially it's because I think officially it's a matter of Deal thinks that the testing ought not to be de-emphasized to the extent that Wood says. But what we really have is another example of Georgia's educational governance system throwing a monkey wrench into the works. We've got an elected state school superintendent who reports to but doesn't answer to a state board of education that's appointed by the governor. And then we have a governor who is in almost total control of the educational budget in Georgia. So who gets the final say in this has become we had a terrible problem when Linda Schrenko, the first GOP school superintendent, and Zell Miller clashed like this, and ultimately you had to bring this guy who had pretty much given up on politics, named Johnny Isaacson, to act as an intermediary between the two.
This was a document that was submitted on behalf of the state to Betsy DeVos, who's the education secretary. Her position on education reform and education policy, I think, is far more in line with the governor's than it is Richard Wood's. So that's another reason why I was a little bit really surprised that the superintendent did that, knowing that fact, too. I mean, Richard Wood's background is in education establishment, so to say. It's more a little bit more reluctant to reform and those type of activities. So I think the governor will probably win this, but you know, unfortunately, you hope that you hope that this disagreement doesn't cost money for Georgia's education system.
So one of the interesting things, I've spent part of this week coding old press releases from the Department of Education, so I've had a chance to read sort of how
you really have a fun job.
ESSA was being interpreted, and so ESSA is sort of the Obama sort of era standards. And, you know, there hasn't been a new reauthorization of ESEA, in the Trump administration.
What do these things stand for?
Basically, the things that we all know as No Child Left Behind,
gotcha,
or Race to the Top,
Thank you.
Of those types of programs. So, and looking at this, actually, Wood's vision is in line with the Obama-era regulations that,
sure,
actually did want to de-emphasize and streamline the number of tests that were happening. So, yeah, I'm sure at some point, Secretary DeVos is going to come in and change those things. But if she hasn't done it yet, then ESSA actually still is kind of what's controlling.
Interesting.
Okay. You know what? Let's get a break out of it. I have a few tweets I want to share with you, though, and then we'll take a break. Monday's Child tweets, Price, going back to the Tom Price story, is way too ideological and arrogant. Had no business spending that much time traveling, especially overseas, while he had domestic issues on his plate. Sam Burnham tweets us, name the bridge after Tamachichi or leave it alone. Nothing sounds more generic than the Savannah Bridge. I have to acknowledge, I don't know what that means. Do you know Tamachichi? Sam Burnham, tell us who you're talking about so we understand that one, okay? Good. I was hoping one of you would know, but Sam, send us another tweet. Samuel Bell says, 10 seconds, that's how long after tuning in I'd lost patience with Bill Nigut's mealy-mouthed both-sidism. Well, you know, I know that's kind of a troll, but I sort of accept that as a compliment. My role here is to try to be a force for giving everybody a chance to weigh in so that you can think about how you want to resolve these issues. So, Mr. Bell, I know you didn't mean that as a compliment, but from my point of view, I feel like I'm kind of doing my job helping have smart conversations that represent the various views in this state. Let's take another break. When we come back, boy, is there a lot to talk about with the Alabama Senate race, and we'll do that in just a minute.
How do you bring an abstract concept like partisan gerrymandering to life?
All right, welcome. Welcome to the Fairmaps Town Hall.
How about a bipartisan buddy tour? Two men who ran the Wisconsin Senate joined forces to try and make voters care.
This is about rigging elections.
They're basically devaluing your vote.
I'm Elsa Chang. The View from a Gerrymandered District this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is this afternoon from 4 till 7 on GPB.
I like him. He's a good man. We'll see. He's not a racist.
Chip Lake. You heard Chip Lake coming out of the break there talking about that tweet. I like him. He's a good man.
He's not a racist.
But he may be out. I do think it's interesting. We said Friday nights are when Trump makes these big dramatic decisions. Jim, before we talk about Roy Moore, Puerto Rico is more in the news this week than ever before. And part of it, of course, is significant questions about whether the federal government moved quickly. The president has all week talked about the extraordinary response.
He's complimented himself out to the ends of the earth on this.
And yet, things are not moving. If you watch live reports out of there today, people are not seeing this alleged help that's supposed to be coming in.
Right, and look, journalism was a little bit behind the eight ball on this one.
That's
too.
That's exactly
because it was all. I mean, the logistics involved in reaching this place, mm-hmm, is indeed the bar is very high. It is an island. It is in a big piece of water, But I think what you're seeing is you are seeing people frustrated with Donald Trump's lack of focus on this thing. We had an assistant secretary of Homeland Security, who's the acting secretary of Homeland Security, say that that what's happening in Puerto Rico right now is a good news story. And the mayor of San Juan says, no, it's a people are dying every day now story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the last few hours, Trump has also raised the question of exactly how much effort the federal government will put into the rescue because of Puerto Rico's financial situation. And I would just suggest that, maybe Marco Rubio needs to have a conversation with him, because Puerto Ricans don't need a visa to come to the mainland. And if you have a big migration and it impacts Florida, Republicans could be in trouble.
Well, I mean, and I expect that there is going to be a mass migration. It already started because of the debt crisis, and that's one of the things that is changing the demographics and changing the partisan landscape in the country. But I think what has been really frustrating for me as a citizen to watch when I see what is happening in Puerto Rico. One, yeah, I recognize that FEMA has sent supplies over, but because of the damage and destruction, they also don't have the infrastructure to get it to places where it needs to go. And they need to be honest about how we have supplies there, but we got to figure out how to get across roads that are broken, and we actually need enough drivers in order to make those things happen. We need enough human capital there to make it happen. But I think probably what's been more offensive is, why did it take so long to waive the Jones Act? When you did it faster for Harvey and Irma, and then also, why are you talking about the debt crisis right now? Because mm-hmm. right now that's off the table. That is a separate issue. This is a natural disaster. When you decide you're going to be a colonial power, you take responsibility for territory.
Yeah, it's you're more responsible.
You're more,
not
you
less.
Fix this, and you don't and you deal with that other stuff later. And so that part is offensive. And then to do it on a population, and not just Puerto Rico, but also the Virgin Islands, where these are predominantly people of color, it just reinforces, when you're talking about the NFL and everything else that's happened this summer, it just reinforces this idea that President Trump only cares about certain Americans and not other ones.
It strikes me as odd. What probably compounds this, I think, in many people's minds, is what Galloway just talked about, that the president has patted himself on the back repeatedly about how terrific the response has been. Here's an opportunity to say, instead, we are aware that the crisis is enormous, and we do have to move more quickly. There was a way to spin this that still wouldn't have made life better for the Puerto Rican people, but at least it wouldn't have made Trump look like he's so out of touch on what's really
happening. It's not just out of touch. It's just that he's lying, and that everything has to be spun to make a positive out of it. It's just like, this is not a time to make points about this. Sure. When he first was reluctant to waive the Jones Act because he's worried about the shipbuilding industry, nobody should be worried about profit right now. Yeah. This is about rescuing people.
Well, all right. It's an interesting. So, what I think is going to be fascinating is the president is supposed to be. It's on his schedule to go to Puerto Rico on Tuesday. That too strikes me as, given that supplies aren't out there, that strikes me as an odd choice of timing.
And you're not going to have. It's not going to be like Houston, where you can kind of create your own reception.
Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. We'll watch that. Let's talk about Roy Moore. We just had. We talked on Wednesday show a little bit about the fact that, to no one's great surprise, he beat Luther Strange, the Trump Mitch McConnell candidate, in this Alabama GOP Senate contest. But what we didn't have a great deal of time to do was get into who Roy Moore really is. And we'll probably do more of that in the weeks that we lead up to that election, because it's an important election. Jim, Roy Moore is one of the single most, I think, fair to say, controversial individuals in the
you're lowballing it.
That was a mealy mouth lowball.
Yeah. As is my wont.
Yeah.
Look, the guy. Yes, the guy has been kicked off the judiciary twice.
Yeah.
There was the Ten Commandments issue. Was federal court said no, you can't do that. He said yes, I'm going to anyway, and he got booted off. The same-sex marriage issue, in which he told probate judges in Alabama that they didn't have to perform these ceremonies, they didn't have to sign off on licenses, that got him kicked off the second time. I think that's probably the more egregious of the two. I think, because that was not just Roy Moore acting on his own principle. He was directing others to act on his own principles, and you have a man who has gotten up in front of crowds and says God takes precedence over the Constitution.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that is, I think that's where people have a bit of a problem.
He said that Keith Ellison, the representative from Minnesota, should not be allowed to take his seat in the House, U.S. House, because he is a Muslim and Muslims shouldn't be allowed in Congress. He was a birther, along with Donald Trump. So this is a guy who has a horrific record. But, Andra, the question becomes, are any Republicans... Are Republicans going to simply say, gee, good, we add to our number in Congress? Ironically, even though he's likely to be a guy who will be a disruptive force, or is somebody going to speak out?
Well, based on what we've seen before, I wouldn't expect people to speak out. They need the vote. And so they are, you know, and they've made lots of choices and decisions which suggest that they value political power sometimes over standing up and putting people into account. I think what they're going to try to do is to try to diminish the spotlight from him. They're going to brace themselves for him saying something that's inflammatory and then try to deflect attention away from it as long as he helps them keep their majority.
I think it's very interesting that this is not a Lisa Murkowski situation. Mm-hmm. Where Luther Strange can go out and run as an independent, and gather the votes that he needs, it's just not because it's Alabama, and you have the Democrat Doug Jones, former federal prosecutor, who put the killers of the Birmingham church bombing in jail. He's something like 44%.
44. Yeah.
You know, it's enough to tempt Democrats to jump into this race. But it doesn't give them a whole lot of confidence that they'd succeed.
Chip?
Yeah, I thought it was of note yesterday that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the president's press secretary, said at her daily press briefing or weekly press briefing that the White House disagrees with Roy Moore's comments on homosexuality and Muslims. It's a start. I do think you'll see... You will see some Republicans speaking out, but the more Republicans you see speaking out, I wouldn't be surprised if you see the better he ends up doing in polling data.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, if Republicans did not want Roy Moore, if they're unhappy with Roy Moore being their candidate, then we should have had a better candidate than Luther Strange, and there was nothing the Republican Party could have done about that. Before he was the Attorney General of the state, he was a energy lobbyist, and you know he was investigating the governor, and the governor appointed him to the position. Yeah. I think that kind of embodied the swamp to a lot of people.
Michael, the Democrats really have a pretty outstanding guy running against him, probably not going to have much of a chance, but here's the guy who, federal prosecutor, prosecuted the KKK members years after the Birmingham church bombing, the four little girls who were murdered there. He's got a strong record as an activist. Do you want to see your party get involved in that race, or is it just throwing good money away?
I mean, there's always aspect of, you know, looking at races that are, quote, winnable, right? In any scenario, when you have finite amount of resources and time and, you know, capability to go out and try to win races, it's a good question to ask. And I specifically haven't looked at those numbers in enough detail to know if it's actually a race could be won. But I do know that, you know, whether Republicans step up or not, and you know, this is not the kind of candidate they want, we know this is not the continuation of the message that Americans want to see by and large as a whole, right? So adding another senator to the United States Senate that's going to spew a lot of type stuff that he's been, there is going to be a tipping point, right? And Republicans I can put them on notice today. There is a tipping point to all of this.
This could be a byproduct of a be careful what you wish for culture.
Sure, exactly. Right?
But I mean, you know what? I don't think we've hit rock bottom there yet. So I think it would have to.
We're getting there.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think Roy Moore is going to come in there, and first he's going to vote the way Republicans want him to vote. The problem is that he's going to get on TV and say a bunch of crazy stuff, and people are just going to get heartburn over it.
Yeah, the first time he's on Meet the Press.
Yeah.
And so that's the part that you're looking for. I think when you're looking at on the Democratic side, you know, I have friends who will be working this race, and you know, I think they're hoping for a miracle, but it's going to take a miracle.
I'm sorry, I didn't interrupt. We're close out of time. But you know, in addition to some of the more offensive things that Roy Moore has said, he did prove during the campaign that he's not necessarily up to speed on the issues. There became a relatively famous exchange that he had with a podcast guy in Alabama who I think was sort of in favor of Roy Moore, but asked him a question. And this is how it all went down.
Would you support an end to the Dreamer program that President Trump has still continued to push?
The Dreamer program?
Yes, sir. The DACA, DAPA. You're not aware of what Dreamers are?
No.
Dreamers, this is a big issue in the immigration debate. Dreamers are...
Why don't you tell me what it is, Dale, and quit beating around. Tell me what it is.
I'm in the process of doing that, Judge Moore. I was in the...
Okay.
There you go. You're right, Jim. Wait till Chuck Todd has a chance to talk to him on Meet the Press.
And the thing is that he gets on shows that he probably shouldn't be advised to get on and then does this.
Sure.
That's what the problem is going to be.
Sure, he thought it was a sleep study or something.
that reminds me of a Michael Williams appearance on CNN a few months ago. It seems like it went very similar.
Yeah, he couldn't. Yeah, that's exactly right. Michael Williams, by the way, did go up and demonstrate at that Cherokee County school that wouldn't fire the teacher.
They had about 50 people there, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, he said he was going to do it. Darn it, he did. Michael Williams, a Republican candidate for governor. We're completely out of time. There's so many more things that I would love to cover with, I think, an all-star panel today. I loved having you here, Dr. Andre Gillespie, Michael Owens, Cobb County Democratic Party, Chip Lake, not only a Republican strategist, but the producer and host of what is the name of your college football podcast?
The Red Zone Sports Report. Every Tuesday evening, 8:30 p.m.
Okay, so like...
And it's really good.
And thank you.
Okay, where can they get it?
Blogtalkradio.com. Go to blogtalkradio.com, do a keyword on Red Zone Sports. It'll take you right to the link, and they get you all set up. I'd love to... we've had a lot of fun on there, so thanks for the shout out.
And you've been working with a colleague of
we
ours
have,
here,
Sean Powers.
Sean Powers
has been helping me produce the show,
and thought,
phenomenal job.
And he thinks you're the best. So you know, if you like college football, and who in this audience doesn't?
That's right.
I am one of the rare guys who doesn't pay much attention to it. And Jim Galloway, I'm glad you'll be back with us. We have a great show coming up on Monday. Former Democratic Secretary of State Kathy Cox.
We can talk about what it's like to be a female candidate for governor.
You're right. As she ran for governor, of course. Michael?
Before we get off the air, I have to go back to Tommy Chichu. He was the a Creek leader, Native American, who helped start Oglethorpe. He gave the land to Oglethorpe to actually start Savannah.
I love Google.
My vote is in for him to rename the bridge.
Yep. Kathy Cox is here on Monday. Brian Robinson is here on Monday. And Lori Geary, one of our favorite former political reporters from Channel 2 News. So Jim and I will be back with you. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Take care. See you Monday at 2:00.